Welcome to the Good Growing Podcast. I am Chris Enroth, horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension, coming at you from Macomb, Illinois, and we have got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about plants that bloom at night or creating an evening garden. That will be a lot of fun. You know, I'm not doing this by myself. I'm joined, as always, every single week by horticulture educator Ken Johnson in Jacksonville. Hey, Ken.
Hello, Chris. You enjoying these unseasonably warm, gross days?
I have my sweat cloth right here. I'm batting away the droplets of sweat down my face as we speak. Yeah, it's been pretty warm. We've refused to turn on the air conditioning yet.
Yes, it's getting a little uncomfortable inside. Although by the time people listen to this, it's going to be down in the 30s again
for the Bulls. Perfect. Yes. So if you have seasonal allergies, enjoy this roller coaster of a ride here.
Yes. And hopefully you didn't go buy tomatoes this weekend, this past weekend, when it was 85.
Yep.
Because
you're going to be in 90.
You're going to be in trouble 90. If you put them outside.
Yes. So if you are feeling the itch to get out your warm season veggies, the thing I tell folks is you have to wait until your lows at night are reliably in the 50s. And they're not. If you look at the extended forecast, that's definitely not the case yet. Still April. Actually, we're dead in the middle of April. So even though it feels like it's June right now.
Yes, this weekend I was panicking because I thought I was so far behind. But then when you look at the calendar, not far behind. I got potatoes planted and lettuce and carrots. And so it's about where we should be as far as planting goes.
I got my potatoes. We do fabric bags for our potatoes. And of course, last night I got up this morning and I found that the raccoons had come out and spilled out, dug up all of my potatoes out of the bags. It was great to plant them a second time today.
Put some wire cages over them.
Something.
Cinder block in the bottom so I can't tip it over.
Yeah. They'll still figure out a way. They're too smart, crafty critters. I'll have to employ my radio trick. The radio thing doesn't usually get pulled out until like summertime, though. That's usually when they become a problem in the garden, when they start pulling up plants out of the ground, but it's already started. So can't wait. Yeah. But you know, maybe they're this year with the cicadas coming up, maybe they're just going to leave everything alone and they'll be so fat and happy off of bugs. We don't have to worry about them.
But for a few weeks anyway.
A few weeks.
A few week respite from the raccoons.
All right. Well, that's another show. Anyway, Ken, today we're going to be talking about night blooming plants, insects that do stuff at night and creating gardens for the nighttime. And so I guess, you know, the thing that comes to mind as we were talking before the show starts and you asked me, hey, Chris, do you know anything about this lunar gardening? And I'm like, what are you talking about? So can you enlighten us? Cause we're all in the dark here. Or at least I am, when it comes to gardening by the moon.
Yes. Gardening by the moon or gardening by the phases of the moon. So it's kind of a, I guess somewhat traditional way, maybe traditional, I don't know, folk tale way. I don't know how to describe it. Way of looking at,
mythical,
old timey, back in the day, way of looking at gardening. I'll read this. This is from University of Arkansas. So, planting by phases of the moon is relatively straightforward. Crops that grow below ground, potatoes, onions, carrots, radishes, turnips, etc., are planted in the dark of the moon. That is the period from full moon until the moon disappears and is called the waning phase. Crops grown for above ground consumption, broccoli, lettuce, spinach, beans, tomatoes, etc., are planted in the light of the moon, that period from the new moon, when the moon is completely in Earth's shadow, until full moon and is called the waxing phase. The true practitioners of planting by the signs overlay the 12 signs of the zodiac onto the moon phases and create a more complicated planting protocol. A dozen zodiac symbols are divided into four groups: water, earth, air, and fire. Zodiac symbols associated with the water and earth are considered fertile signs and good for planting, while those associated with air and fire are considered barren and not good times to plant. So based on where the moon is and where all the zodiac signs, the constellations and all that are in the sky, is how your you're planting stuff and I've seen stuff on, you know, with the was it the full moon, new moon, you know, your tides and stuff, you know, those times it's going to pull the water to the surface of the soil, so you don't want to till or anything like that because it'll make it more difficult. And I've gotten asked about this a few times from people, and everything I have read, there's no scientific research, I guess, based to any of this. It's all, I'll say made up because I'm going to make people angry, but
I'll say it. Sounds made up, Ken.
there's no basis in research that I have come across. We'll put it that way. So
Okay.
I guess it's something fun to do, but it's, you know, I guess from our extension research perspective, research-based information, there's no truth to any of it. I would pay more attention to your frost dates and things like that.
I can barely get things on the ground at all, so having to wait till a particular phase of the moon is not going to sit well with my schedule. But
Maybe
you
it'll
know,
keep you on track.
it would keep, you know, it would keep me on track. You know, I guess I'm the typical Capricorn, as you would say. So, no, anyway, yeah, people call me that. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I do everything just perfectly. Anyway, so lunar planting, yeah, not. Do it if you want, I guess.
But there's no research backing it up that we have been able to find.
Okay, well that's good to know. You know, if that question ever comes my way, I can tell folks, again, do what you want, no research. So very good. Well, but there are things that we can put out into the landscape, to help maybe emphasize a particular lunar phase. Normally it's the full moon, where you see that light that's reflecting off the moon's surface is striking the earth. And there are some full moon nights where it's almost like you can see, you know, for distances because of the light that it provides, and then how it illuminates certain flowers and foliage. That I think is very striking in a nighttime garden. And so, Ken, I suppose, do we have any plants? You know, from a landscaping perspective, I'm trying to think of what plants could we recommend that would show off at nighttime in the moonlight filled garden. Do you have any in your landscape or any favorites of yours?
Yeah, so there's a lot, you know, a lot of times these are going to be white flowers. So a couple that we have grown in our yard is flowering tobacco. So and this flowering tobacco comes in several different colors. We did a white and a pinkish color. Those white flowers kind of reflect that moonlight, make them glow in the dark, kind of sort of, not really, but they reflect that moonlight and makes them a little more noticeable because of that white coloring. And with flowering tobacco, that's one. We can get into this more a little bit. It also releases its fragrance at night. So it becomes more fragrant during the night as well. So it's kind of an added bonus if you're going to be doing this night garden, moon garden, some people refer to them as. Another one we have is dragon fruit or pitaya. So if you've ever gone to the grocery store and gotten those weird pink looking scaly fruits, this is a cactus type plant. It's a vining type plant. So we actually have one of these that we move in and outside. It's a tropical plant. So when it's temperatures are getting down into the 50s, we lug it inside. But it's got a really big white flower. It opens up at night. It's only open for a day or one night. So you miss it, you're out of luck, and can pop in a picture here of it. Pretty big flower. It smells, it's pretty fragrant as well. And if you're maybe more familiar with that, like a night blooming cirrus, which is another kind of cactus-like that's related. They have similar-looking flowers and opening at night, releasing their fragrance as n at night as well. And that's another one. It's also tropical, so you're bringing that in when it gets cool. But they can live outside during the summer and stuff.
Mentioned several of these plants, and a lot of them have tubular shaped flowers. So when we're looking at tubular shaped flowers, we see those as typically pollinated by insects that have a long proboscis. They have a tongue. Maybe they're small enough to wiggle their way down in there. So when we think about nighttime flowering plants, Who's visiting those types of flowers?
So a lot of time it's going to be moths. So moths are out at night. So I guess if you're a plant and you want moths to pollinate you, it makes sense to have your flowers open at night, be most fragrant at night. So you're going to spend this energy to attract them. You might as well do it when they're out. So a lot of times it's going to be moths and stuff, especially if things are opening up at night and they're releasing their scent at night. Here in the Midwest anyway, moths, down in desert and tropical areas, it could be bats could be thrown into there as well. But for Illinois, we're looking at moths stuff. And for like our dragon fruit. So we were down in South Florida, at a dragon fruit farm and saw some flowers at night, and they had a lot of beetles and stuff on there. So it won't only be moths that visited, but primarily our night blooming stuff, a lot of times is going to be moth pollinated.
Okay. Well, so I have an angel's trumpet. And I have been bringing that thing in and out over the last couple of years. And unfortunately, this winter, it got hammered by spider mites. A lot of my indoor plants actually got hit pretty hard by spider mites. It killed my lemon tree. It got a lot of stuff in my house. And so my angel's trumpet, it has like one leaf left on it. So I desperately need to get that thing outside and maybe get it exposed to more of the natural elements to help take care of some of those problems. The spider mites are gone, but I think the damage has been done for that plant. But the angel's trumpet, this has a massive bloom on it. But again, it's tropical. So what it, I'm guessing it's attracting maybe a larger insect. Some of our around our neck of the woods, we still have big moths, Luna moths, hawk moths, and they're pretty big. So are those particular moths coming in and pollinating some of the larger flowers?
Yeah, probably. So, and some moths, I mean, they can have really long tongues, not necessarily in the Midwest, but like in the tropics, they can have tongues that are like foot long, and stuff. So they have these really long tongues or proboscis that they're like butterflies, so they'll be curled up when they're not using it, and they'll unfurl it to feed. I think of it like a party blower. You have a birthday party, so you blow on it extends and then curl up so it doesn't take up as much space.
Well, I recommend Angel's Trumpet. I think it's a really neat performing, well, kind of tree. Ours is like a tree, so just kind of painful to lose it. But we're gonna get it outside here pretty soon and see if we can maybe bring it back from the brink and maybe repot it. It's in a pretty small pot, so maybe we can help it out. It is pot poisonous, so Angel's Trumpet's poisonous. So it's one of those. I usually get people that say, "Yeah, but that'll kill you if you eat it." Like, yeah, a lot of plants that we talk about will. So, just don't eat them. Yeah, unless they're in the vegetable garden.
That Datura.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't eat it. It can be fragrant. Ours, I never really got much of a fragrance from ours. But we would always have it. So in our house, we have this little back raised deck right off the ground. And so we would have our containers of stuff around the deck, and Angel's Trumpet is always by where we sit. So it's colorful, it's bright even at nighttime. But I've never picked up a fragrance from this particular plant, even though I know people have said that theirs are fragrant.
Well, see your flowers this year. Stick your nose inside one and
If it
see what
survives,
it's like.
yeah, I hope it survives. I do like this plant. The lemon tree, I'm kind of happy it's no longer with us anymore because it was covered in thorns. So, RIP lemon tree.
So I wonder if like angel trump, are there different species or cultivars? Maybe you just have one that's not as fragrant as others.
I might, yeah. It was you can get like starts that come off of the base and out of the soil or the pot, the container that it's in. And I think mine is just a division from one from my parents' house. And so I'm not sure where, and they've had that thing since I was little. So it's an older angel's trumpet tree. So another one, a night blooming plant. It's actually, I see it blooming also a little bit during the day, but there's several different species of this. Now the genus is Oenothera. That's what I call it. And the first Oenothera that I learned was Missouri primrose. And another common name, and I think sometimes the common names get a little bit confused with actually like different species. And so a lot of times people will call these evening primrose, even though a lot of them are actually separate species of Oenothera. The generally accepted common name evening primrose, that is often a night blooming plant. Now, I know the Missouri primrose as being yellow flowered. We often called it the mailbox plant. It's the one thing that you could plant at the base of the mailbox, and it would come back reliably year after year, despite abuse from drought, pavement, road salt, all that stuff that happens by the mailbox. And so this is a bit smaller of a yellow flower, again, tubular shaped, probably pollinated by night flying moths, or maybe even smaller insects, something that might be able to access that pollen deep inside of it, or that nectar reward deep inside of it. But yeah, evening primrose, or I know Oenothera macrocarpa, but evening primrose is actually Oenothera speciosa. So there's several different types out there, and I think before you go out there saying, "Ooh, this is my night blooming perennial that I'm going to put out here," make sure that you read specifically that scientific name, because I think there's a lot of confusion with common name and scientific name. I'm confusing myself a little bit even right now. So, but yeah, Oenothera genus level, outstanding a grouping of plants.
Yeah, another one I've heard of. Well, we've talked about growing it in our garden. I think we've even gotten seeds for it, but never gotten around to planting it. Is 4 o'clock. That's another one that's commonly grown, kind of for night gardens. I think this is one that fragrance again is stronger at night as well. Flowers opening up later in the day, and at night, and then kind of closing up a little bit. Or during the day, during like cloudy days, a lot of these, if they open at night, sometimes they may stay open if it's cloudy, but a lot of these night blooming ones may kind of close up a little bit at night as well. And it's a little bit of a smaller plant, about 15 inches tall, and can reseed. So keep that in mind if you do grow it.
I have not grown this one myself either. And in reading the description and everything about it, I kind of want to grow it. I do like the idea of a nighttime fragrance. This would be one that I would really like to try growing. Yeah, 4 o'clock. And also, we talk about like, oh, these are kind of bright flowers. And 4 o'clock does have bright flowers. It has a white flowered variety, but there's also like pink, red, kind of darker flowers. And so doesn't necessarily mean that they need to be a bright white flower to be a night blooming plant. So there's lots of different flower colors in the 4 o'clock group.
And then if we kind of veer away from flowers a little bit, I've seen like recommendations for like caladiums, some of the white caladiums. Again, you got that white leaves are predominantly white with some green in them. And then again, that'll help reflect that moonlight, make them pop a little bit at
Yeah,
night as well.
I agree. I love caladium at night, especially if you maybe have a grouping of that somewhere farther back in the landscape. So if you're sitting on a patio area and you're looking out into the landscape area, having a grouping of caladium out there that just pops like a bright color out there in the evening. Another one that I see pop a lot is Jack Frost, which is Siberian bugloss. I think I learned it as Brunera. But the cultivar name is Jack Frost. It has this like deep green interlacing color, but the majority of that leaf is like a silvery white. And it just I remember walking by this plant in the evening, and even on a kind of a darker night, you can still see it. It's a good waypoint to have in the yard if it's like dark out, and you're like, oh, I can still see the reflective light off of my Jack Frost Brunera.
Say Dusty Miller would be another one. If you want that silvery foliage as well, that would be another option. And that's what, about a foot tall, maybe a little less. So a shorter plant.
That's another good container one too. If you can site that even around your landscape in a couple of good containers, you could put it in the ground as well, but I often wind up throwing them in a container. Is usually part of my taller plant that what are they called? Your thrillers.
Thriller, filler, spiller.
Yeah, taller, spikier. It's not really spiky, but taller plant. I guess we probably should mention the one flower that a lot of people talk about at night, the moonflower. A bit more in depth here. So that's one that I've grown from seed. I've done it a few years now. I wish I'd done it last year, but it's one that the seed comes out. I mean, it's like bigger than a piece of corn. Like it's a big seed that you have to like jam, 2.5 inches into that pot and get that thing to sprout. But moonflower vine is, it's an annual, at least in my neck of the woods, it's an annual. And we have a little metal trellis. It's nothing substantial, but we plant that and we have that trellis up along our really short deck area there. And when you're like sitting in a chair and this like moonflower vine flower just sort of like pops up out of nowhere over your shoulder, and it opens at night. It's this bright white, this kind of twisted star pattern in the flower. It's a beautiful flower. It's like the size of a teacup or a teacup plate, a little
Saucer.
saucer. There you go. I'll learn words eventually. I absolutely love moonflower. It is a favorite of mine, and I look forward to growing it every year. I didn't grow it last year, and I don't have any seed left. Because you can save seed from that plant, and you can grow it every single year. I did not save seed. That's why I didn't grow it last year.
May have to add that to my list. I've never grown that one.
It's a good one. It's an Ipomea, which I believe is related to sweet potato. A sweet potato is Ipomea batatas. Is that what that is?
Morning glories.
That's morning glory. Yeah. Oh, what is sweet potato? Yeah. If I don't know, I bet the internet knows.
Ipomea.
Okay.
Ipomea, however you say it. But yeah,
Ipomea
that's all.
batatas.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, those are all morning glories, though.
Okay. So they're
Sounds
all
like.
morning glories. Yeah.
And some
Yes.
people. So is it, I guess, is the moonflower, is that as problematic as some of the other morning glories as far as reseeding?
It might be. We've never had an issue with any of our moonflower seed sprouting back the next year. Even if we don't get the pod harvested, we still, yeah, we've never had an issue with it coming out. I mean, but it is a vine and it grows prolifically during the growing season. And so, this is one you want to give it some room to grow or something to grow on. It will cover some ground, that's for sure. Yeah, Ipomea alba, that's the moonflower vine.
Needs space.
Give it some room. Put it somewhere where you're going to be sitting. I think it has a sweet fragrance. It's something that it will kind of waft over you as you're sitting there. Not constantly throughout the night, but you'll just get just every so often this pleasing scents coming off of this plant. So yeah, it's a favorite. I really like it. Ken, highly recommend it.
All right, it's on the list.
Excellent.
Maybe for next year. I think our yard's already full for this year.
Well, Ken, I guess another way that we can look at our evening landscapes is also the idea of incorporating some landscape lighting. Now, we probably won't go into too much detail on this and during this show, and maybe we'll have a future show where we talk a bit more about this. There was once a time when I knew all about this stuff. And that was a long time ago. And that was right when some of that low voltage lighting was just starting to come on the market. So LED lighting was just starting to be like, hey, this is an option for people willing to pay a lot of money to try a system that's not that great. We're still trying to fix the bugs with it. So, but when it comes to landscape lighting, that was something that we would create design plans for some of our landscapes, and we would work in foot candles. And we would like have like overhead lighting, or we'd have like up lighting, and these different types of accent lighting, path lighting, and we would just work in foot candles, and that's what a lot of the specifications were when we're looking at like individual fixtures, and to us, a fixture is the thing that contains the bulb, and it's usually decorative and ornamental. And so we kind of, that's how we worked in designing lighting plans. And I don't really have much to say about it other than the biggest mistake that a lot of people make is making their landscapes too bright. They wash it all out. You can do some pretty evocative night lighting with just some really subtle, low level lighting, and just not trying to overdo it. So I think some of the most dramatic landscapes, as I think back, oh yeah, you're walking up to a restaurant in the city or something, and they have their planters all lit up. They're usually not bright, blinding light. It's very low, subtle lighting, and it sets a mood, creates a nice atmosphere. And so, I'd suggest to folks, don't overdo it with landscape lighting. And maybe one day I'll review my old notes and we'll talk about this a bit more in depth. But today, I guess I'd have to relearn everything because LEDs are it's a whole new world. You get these systems installed in your yard, and you can control everything with your phone. Before I used to have this like control panel that controlled your landscape lighting. Now it's all just it's an app on your phone, and you can create brighter light, warmer light, cooler light. It's really just all kind of customizable to the user. It's pretty neat. There's a lot of stuff that I have to learn now.
Back to school.
Exactly. I mean, that is life, right? We're just one big classroom that we're in here.
And I would say, your night lighting isn't without problems. So I think more and more the last several years, you see a lot of stuff on, well, with the decline of insects, with night lighting being an issue for insects, you've seen a lot of cities go with like the LED lights. They're a much brighter, more blue color. Put more of them in because they're cheaper and stuff, which, if we're talking from a wildlife perspective or even really a human perspective, it's really not that good. That yellow light, I think studies have shown, is better for like humans and stuff for your night vision, whereas that blue, looking at a phone screen at night, that messes up with the brain waves and makes it harder to sleep and all of that stuff. So, but with, like, lighting at nights, you've got things coming out at night, the moths and stuff, that are now. So I think people kind of think they're attracted to the light, or for whatever reason, but actually they kind of use, the moon to orient themselves. So, they get close to these lights are brighter than the moon, and that's why they circle them. They're kind of facing their back because that's how they orient themselves. The moon's in the sky, so they know that way's up. So now you've got this light that's brighter, and that's why they're constantly circling it and stuff, trying to orient themselves to this bright light. You got things like fireflies, lightning bugs, depending on where you're from. They're signaling each other with light. So if you've got too much light, they can't attract mates and stuff, which is going to cause problems. So, night lighting is not without its problems. If you're doing night lighting, you want to go more towards that yellow range. You don't want the really blue or white lights. That will, again, like I mentioned, cause problems. Thinking about putting things on timers so they're not on all night, or using like motion detectors. That's going to be more for like house or garage lighting, so they're not on constantly. They're only going on when they, in theory, would need to be on, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even though I think landscape lighting is an important feature in a lot of effective designs, like you said, Ken, put them on a motion activated system. And that's fortunately a lot of the new technology is like leading us towards that. Whether you're more on the track of like insect conservation or energy reducing your energy use. Both of those things play into each other. So if we can reduce the amount of lighting that we have at night, that would just be leaps and bounds. I mean, we're sitting out there at night, we're enjoying the flowers, we're enjoying the scents, we're enjoying that evening atmosphere. We want to see the stars. We want to be able to look up and see The sky above us. And when we have the street light on, when we have all of these other neighborhood lighting that are just always on, you can't see the stars. I recall a couple of years ago when we moved into our new house, fireflies, they were everywhere. And the next year they came in and all of the street lights were broken, and then they fixed them. We barely see any fireflies anymore. And so it is an incredible deal, I think. Yes, turn them off, or if you can at least slide them over to that yellow spectrum, do that. We try to convince people, and kind of locally here, where I live, we have this always on light at the park. So at a meeting, we're just like, can we just put this on a timer? Like, we understand there's a safety issue, we understand all that, but like, turn it off at midnight or turn it off at 10 p.m. Like, just at least turn it off sometime at night, so that we can give our insects a break and they don't exhaust themselves circling this thing.
That's another thing we could talk about too, is just insects at night. There's a whole different world of insects that are coming out at night that, well, maybe not people that listen to this, but I think most people in general are just unaware of the insects around them. But at night, that's a whole different group or world of insects. And you've got your moths, you've got other insects that only come out at night. Going back into grad school, and I still do some today, setting up black lights at night or other types of lights to attract insects, and you can find a whole different spectrum of things coming out at night. So if that's your thing, you like insects, set up a black light, get a sheet, white sheet, hang your black light on that, and insects will land on there, and you can find a whole different groups that you've probably never seen before, if you've never really looked for them at night. So if you're doing a insect collection, you're in 4-H, you got school, it's a good way to find stuff that you wouldn't normally find.
Oh yeah, really stump the judge on your at your 4-H show. Yeah, that would be a good one. Last summer we were doing we were with our Dr. Joy O'Keefe. She was on the show. She was talking about bats. So we brought her out to do a bio blitz, and we misnetted some bats. And this is all done at night. And we were out in the bottomlands of the Illinois River. And every time we clicked on our headlamp, we just got a mouthful of insects. They just like came at us. But we'd have to have the headlamp on so we could, take measurements on the bats and everything and do that. Well, I didn't do that. You have to be licensed to handle bats here in Illinois, but I watched and took notes. But it just goes to show, like, those insects, they're drawn to that light. So it was pitch black where we were, and as soon as we click on our headlamp, they were in our face. So we had to turn off our headlamps every so often so we could have a little bit of a break, and we could like breathe through our mouth, every so often. But can't stress enough, if you can turn off a light at night, do that. And as Ken said, night lighting, it's fun. Somewhat colleague of ours, Angela Morehouse, she's with the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission. She'll go out and she'll do night lighting for insects, try to document insects in like prairie and woodland, wetland type areas and different ecosystems. And it is a blast to see when she hangs up her white bed sheet on a line. You see just the most colorful insects. I think so, like Fred Baxendale, he was an entomologist at University of Nebraska, and I think he sums it up perfectly when it talks about insects. He calls it nature's wondrous pageantry, and that's like, I think, sums it up really nicely, the different types of colors that you can find of insects at nighttime. So yeah, Ken, you did it again. We went to talk about landscaping at night, and it devolved into bugs at night. So you did it again.
Don't squish them, just look at them.
That's right. Yep. And you know what? Sometimes eat them, but that's
Sometimes
coming up on another show. Yeah. All right. Well, that was a lot of great information about landscaping at night, and then, well, just sort of forgetting about that topic and just talking about bugs at night. So, the Good Growing Podcast is a production of University of Illinois Extension, edited this week by Ken Johnson. And a special thank you to Ken for hanging out with me, as always, every single week, chatting about landscaping at night, aka bugs at night. So, thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for indulging my sidetrack there.
You're like just kind of, you're reeling me in farther and farther on this whole bug journey here.
Soon you'll be too deep and you won't be able to get out.
I know. I think I'm already there. I think I'm already there. I'm quoting entomologists. I'm doing all this stuff. What have you done to me?
Let's do this again next week.
Oh, we shall do this again next week. Guess what we're talking about? More bugs. This is kind of a big deal. Like the periodical cicada emergence that's coming up. So next week we are going to be talking about the cicadas, periodical cicadas that are emerging, and what to do about protecting some of our landscape trees and shrubs. And so you won't want to miss that show. It's going to be kind of a big one because there's going to be a lot of cicadas, billions if not trillions of cicadas out and about. So I'm looking forward to that. Well, listeners, thank you for doing what you do best, and that is listening, or if you're watching this on YouTube, watching. And as always, keep on growing. Boy, good luck editing this part, Ken.